Blog Talk Radio.
Monday. Got a very jam-packed show today. I over-prepared just a tad. So we'll talk a little bit about the assault on the Dallas Police Department in just a second here. We'll kick it off with that. A lot of information on that one. A lot of quotes, a lot of things to give you there. We also have Crooks and Liars has an interesting report, or I should say a study that they're reporting on in the Journal of Health Affairs. That's where it was published. And it basically totally obliterates the right-wing talking point that healthcare would be better if it was privatized and if we had a system that was more for-profit. It totally obliterates that idea. And you'll hear a lot of numbers on that as well. Chris Christie decided to come out strongly against Universal College. Can't say I'm surprised, but needless to say, his argument was lacking any intellectual merit. Mitt Romney puts on a clinic in projection. Again, that shouldn't be surprising to anybody either, but it's interesting nonetheless. Ann Coulter says something so ridiculous that I'm not even sure she believes it. It's that extreme, it's that out there, and then when upon doing further research on it, I learned that she actually said it at other times as well, which makes me think she actually is serious about it. I don't want to ruin it too much right now and give you too much information on it right now, but you'll like that story for sure. And I got a really interesting story on Netanyahu and what his response is to the BDS movement, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. You could probably already predict it without me even telling you, and that says a lot about Netanyahu. And also a very heartbreaking story about an investigation into crimes by the Israeli military. The conclusion is not good. What they decided is not good, but I'll save my anger for later. And Fox News host knows absolutely nothing about what's in the Bible. No shock there. In fact, I believe that's a job requirement. You must know nothing about it in order to comment on it. All right, let's go ahead and get started here, and we'll kick it off with the Dallas Police Department story that everybody was talking about. 35-year-old James Boulware launched an all-out assault on Dallas Police Headquarters over the weekend. Huffington Post reports on this, quote, "The family of a man suspected in a brazen attack on Dallas Police Headquarters Saturday said he harbored a personal grudge against cops and has a violent criminal history that includes death threats and assaults on relatives and alleged plans to gun down innocent people at schools and churches." They continue, Boulware told negotiators that cops took his child from him and accused him of being a terrorist, and he said he was going to blow up the police in retribution. So right off the bat here, we have an incredibly ironic line. He's like, I can't believe you called me a terrorist, so I will blow you up. Well, that would prove their point. It's amazing that you don't understand that. Now, also, I should mention that when they alluded here to the fact that he has a history of violence and that he assaulted some relatives, they go into detail about that in another article, and they talk about how it was his mother, and he basically tried to choke out his mother, and thankfully his uncle was there to beat his ass and push him off. And then, of course, he attacked his uncle as well. So we're dealing with an individual here that has many, many problems, to say the least. So after assaulting the police department with an armored van, and of course he had a whole bunch of weapons as well, he used pipe bombs as well in this attack, he was shot and killed in a standoff. So he assaulted the police department, used an armored van, he was armed to the teeth as well, had all these different weapons, used pipe bombs. Then the fight kind of moved from one place to another to a parking lot, and he was killed by a sniper when he stopped, showing an interest in talking with the negotiator. They say, quote, "When police arrested James Boulware in 2013, they found a cache of weapons, of guns, and ammunition in his home. They confiscated at least four long guns, three handguns, body armor, and tubs of ammunition." So here's where a lot of confusion comes in about this story. There are conflicting narratives as to his motives. So according to police in 2013, they said, quote, "He talks to himself quite frequently and appears to be delusional." So there we have our first narrative and our first motive here, which is that he's a crazy person. And a lot of the other evidence in this case does point in that direction. But along with the crazy, there's some political undertones as well. So here's a comment on Facebook that he made on his judge's page. Now understand, this judge ruled that he wasn't fit to have his kid, and the judge gave custody of the kid to the mother. But here's what he said on the page of the judge. Quote, "Your president did not kill bin Laden until election was coming up. The White House was called a million times telling them where bin Laden was. The way I figured out where he was, where did he get his water from? He was in a desert. Only certain areas of a desert have water." All right, that seemingly was totally unprovoked and had nothing to do with anything his judge said, but he went on this crazy rant about bin Laden, and Obama didn't really want to get him, but he ended up getting him, and deserts and water and yada yada. And this kind of feeds into the narrative, not only that he's a political kind of guy, but also it feeds into the first motive here, which is that he's a crazy person. Then on another online forum, he said the following. "Texas, the state where he lives, is a horrible place to live. Too much government control. The CPSS, also known as the Hitler Youth Program," he says, "kids with impunity. Jobs are scarce. The police and the FBI are all part of the mafia. So if you want my advice," and he spelled advise, not advice, "stay away." Now then, also, there's another thing that they found, which he was talking online about conspiracy stuff. He weighed in on the Ukraine conflict with Russia, and he spoke about communism, and this guy's all over the map with the different beliefs that he has. And it basically boils down to this. Is it that he's purely a crazy person who's a lone wolf who lost his shit and he started killing people, specifically cops at the Dallas department? Or is it more that it was specifically for a political reason in the sense that he just said, government's too big, the government took my kids and gave them to my wife, therefore I'm going to attack because, the tyrannical forces of the establishment have kept me down and done me wrong. So now I will try to break down the government and the establishment by specifically attacking the police department. And by the way, that does lend credibility to that argument because although he is clearly crazy on some level, he didn't target somebody that wasn't government related. It's not like he went back to a family member or to a friend who pissed him off or even to his wife or to anybody like that. He specifically went to the police department, who didn't even really have much to do with the judge and the case where his kid was sent to his mother, to the kid's mother. So what's the verdict on this? Well, honestly, there's so much conflicting information that I would have to say you got to give credit to both theories because there's a grain of truth in both theories. But naturally, how's the media covering this? They're only covering one narrative. The only narrative they've brought up is that he's a crazy person, he's a lone wolf, and that's the end of the conversation. And don't call this terrorism. Now, some articles and online outlets, to be clear, they're doing a good job, and some of them are saying this might be terrorism. But in the mainstream media, you find that they're hesitant to call it terrorism. Fox News bent over backwards to avoid calling it terrorism. And again, this goes back to something we talk about all the time, double standards. And the double standard is, if we're talking about a white person, err on the side of this is a lone nut, this is a crazy person, this is a shooting, but this isn't necessarily terrorism, it's not linked to a political ideology. But remember, if he says, hey, there's too much government control here, Texas is a bad place to live, this government agency is tyrannical, yada yada, and then he targets the police, well, there's certainly a degree, a level of terrorism in that that should be discussed. But look, to be totally honest and totally clear about this, you know, to liberals, understand, man, that this is actually this is a slightly more complicated situation than just saying terrorist and the media has failed us completely. Because there are many examples of that, but this one is a little bit more complicated. So, for example, all the sovereign citizens attacks that we've covered in great detail on this show that have been not covered hardly at all by the mainstream media, none of them have been referred to as terrorism. None of them. There's your better example of the double standard and the hypocrisy and the narrative issue that they have where only Muslims are terrorists. The story recently with the former politician in Tennessee, the guy who ran for office, who ended up wanting to do a terrorist attack and trying to do a terrorist attack against Muslims in New York. There's another example of an attempted terrorist attack that wasn't called a terrorist attack. So there are clear examples of that hypocrisy. This one's a mixed picture. There is some hypocrisy. There is a little bit of a double standard. But it also is the case, according to all the evidence from my reading of it, that he is a crazy person, too. It's not. It really is. That is a level of it, and I don't think he wasn't coordinating with any other, you know, anti-government group or anything like that. But either way, this is a story that it came and went pretty fast. And what I mean by that is, so it happened on Saturday. By the time I read the news for the first time since the weekend, so this morning, Monday morning, I had to go. It was on none of the front pages anymore of any of the websites I go to, and I go to over a dozen websites. And they do a good job, to be clear here. But, like, it's been, what, one full day since it happened. There were no in-detail articles. I had to go back and find them. And, again, if this were a situation, take the Boston bombing, for example. Take any other act of terrorism done by a Muslim anywhere. That thing stays on the front page, and that thing is shoved in your face for a week. So in that respect, there is even more of a double standard, and there is more hypocrisy. We're hesitant to view something done by a white person as terrorism. We're quick to judge anything done by a Muslim as terrorism. Okay. Now, we're going to switch gears pretty abruptly here. And we're going to talk about healthcare. Crooks and Liars is reporting on a really interesting study on the issue of healthcare in America. It was published last week in the journal Health Affairs, and it has some damning conclusions. Here's what they say. Quote, of the 50 U.S. hospitals that mark up prices the most, 49 of them are part of for-profit hospital chains. Using 2012 data provided by 4,483 hospitals to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, researchers found that those 50 had an average markup of 1,013% over what Medicare pays. That's almost three times the average markup at the other 4,433 hospitals. The average markup for those other hospitals, most of them nonprofits, was 340%. So that's incredible because it shows that even the so-called nonprofits are screwing you in America. Even the nonprofits are essentially price gouging you. But the for-profits are significantly worse. So they go on to explain that this really should put to rest the idea that the problem with American healthcare is that we don't have enough capitalism. We don't have enough of a free market system. Because that's the solution from a bunch of Republicans. They say, oh, Obamacare is a disaster. Government health care is always a disaster. That's the worst. What we need to do is get to a system that's purely based on the marketplace, purely based on capitalism. So they want to make everything for profit in the health care system. Oh, no, that's a disaster. Whether it's health insurance or health care, what this is showing you right here is that they price gouge you more, and they screw you over more. And the outcomes, it's not like, you know, the more money you pay, the better care you get. Absolutely not. That's not the case either. They're just screwing you. It's really that simple. So they also say at the very top of the markup list was North Okaloosa Medical Center in Crestview, Florida. That hospital had the distinction of marking up its costs an average of 1,260%. The Atlantic took a look at their markups and found that the hospital charged $79,350 to treat a hemorrhage. That's compared to Medicare's reimbursement of $5,177. Good googly moogly. So in other words, the actual price of what we're dealing with here is around that, $5,177. That's the real price. And also, if you take into account what something like that would cost in Europe or in Canada or in Australia, I'm sure that for them it costs even less to fix something like that. But here in America, while that's the price, $5,177, they mark it all the way up to $79,350. And people wonder why in America medical bills is the number one cause of bankruptcy. Well, there you go right there. It's like no matter what you have, no matter what you get, no matter what kind of attention you need, you're always getting fucked. I mean, we covered a story about a year ago which highlighted exactly how they price gouge you. So they have these lists that they use for their pricing, and things are incredibly misleading. The way that they, you know, break down the costs of what you owe is absurd. I mean, for example, if it's a tissue box, if you ask for tissues and they put a tissue box in your room, they write it down on your bill as a medical cough suppressant aid, and they charge you like $45 for a box of tissues. Now, you know how much that costs when you go to the store. It ain't $45. So, and this, you know, happens for everything. If they give you some Advil, they're going to bang you out on that too. They give you, like with little kids sometimes, they give them stuffed animals or something like that to make them smile. They charge people for that too, and they charge them an arm and a leg. And the list goes on and on. So people wonder why, you know, we get so screwed compared to other nations. Well, this is why right here. It's almost like we've accepted the absurdity of our system. There was a great meme going around Facebook and Twitter recently that was basically like a picture of the people from Breaking Bad, and it said, all you need to know about the U.S. healthcare system is that a number one hit show was about a guy who needed to sell crystal meth to pay for his fucking medical bills. And it's true! Like, that is the idea of the show, and we're just like, oh, no, I get it. He's got medical bills. You've got to pay them. In other countries, they're like, medical what? You do realize, you know, our system's here. You get sick, you get help. End of discussion. I've told this story before, but I forget whether it was Britain or somewhere else, but somebody had a baby. You know, they went through the whole process. A camera crew was following them. It turns out that obviously it cost them $0.00. But not only that, when it was time for them to leave, they were offered transportation that the hospital would pay for them to get home. So they net made, like, whatever it is, $20 when having a baby. Think about that through the context and through the lens of American politics. I could just see Republican congressmen grandstanding, railing against this if we had a policy like this where they say, we've incentivized people to have babies so they can make $20 at a time every 9 months. You can just see the conversation and the debate that they have, and it would be absolutely ridiculous. But again, here's the sad thing. No matter how much empirical data I give you, no matter how many studies I quote, no matter how much information and education we do, we run into a fucking concrete wall that stops us from moving forward. Why? Because the Republican Party is just a corrupt, disgusting, idiotic mess that don't know anything. And the Democratic Party is still fairly corrupt, and they throw us a bone every once in a while, but that bone that they throw is, let's do Obamacare, where we slightly reform the system but still keep the private health insurance companies in place, and we still have for-profit hospitals. So when the more liberal party is still on the side of conservative policies, like the individual mandate, that's how you know we're fucked. Nobody's even seriously discussing, and it's not like we're on the verge of getting something like single-payer health care, Medicare for all system for everybody. When we know that's the solution, it's not debatable. It's not a matter of opinion as to which system is better. We know what system is better because of studies like this. It's just a matter of implementing it now And the problem is the politicians aren't on board, and of course the health insurance companies and the health care companies and the pharmaceutical companies are going to try to block it come hell or high water, because they make a lot of money by screwing you. Okay. Whew. All right, let me do one more here before we take our first break. It'll be Chris Christie. Chris Christie went on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, and he came out strongly against free college.
So the gloves are off. I can see that right now. One of her biggest applause lines yesterday when she talked about Americans going to college without drowning in debt. The other Democratic candidate has already come out for debt-free college education. You took on that idea this week on your visit to Iowa. What is wrong with it, and what's your alternative?
My alternative is we have to start to put market forces on these college costs. George, you know, I pay for two college tuitions right now, one at Princeton and one at Notre Dame. And I can tell you that they're the most opaque bills you'll ever see in your life. If you got that bill for dinner with that little bit detail, you wouldn't pay it. You'd send it back. Yet for college, we pay it. They need to start telling us exactly what they're spending their money on, the money we give them. And secondly, we need to start to say, unbundle that. So if a child doesn't want to pay for all these different things in college, they should be able to select it. That'll tell colleges what they don't need to provide, and we shouldn't have to pay for the things that we don't want to use. That'll help to contain costs. But the idea of free college for everybody, there's nothing free in this world. We need to earn what we get.
Funny how that wasn't your position when it came to bailing out Wall Street. Weird. Funny how that's not your position when it comes to giving more money to defense contractors. Again, that's weird. Funny how that wasn't your position when Hurricane Sandy hit and you were begging FEMA for 100% reimbursement. Again, weird. So things are free when you want them to be free, but when you don't want them to be free, like with college, then they're not free. Okay, here's the bottom line. If you're more morally outraged at the idea of debt-free college than at war, your moral compass is broken. And remember, Chris Christie has been on the page, you know, talking about being hawkish on foreign policy, talking about increasing NSA spying and stuff like that. So in that area, oh my God, he doesn't give a goddamn, and he doesn't even mention the deficit or debt or fiscal conservatism, or he doesn't even mention how much money it costs. He's just on the page of doing all those things. But when it comes to free college, debt-free college, oh, we can't afford it, and we got to do more free market, making everything for profits, the answer. Chris, we just did a story. It's a study from the journal Health Affairs on healthcare in America. 49 of the 50 most expensive hospitals in America that price gouge the fuck out of their customers, out of their patients, they're for profit. There was an average markup of 1,013% over what Medicare pays. So this is what happens when you make everything, you know, more free market. Let's base it more on free market principles so people can screw over the American public. That would be fantastic. Now you want to do that in when it comes to college too? They just shut down Corinthian colleges because it was a for-profit scam. They were lying about job placement that they get for students when they graduate and stuff like that. Come to find out, when it is for-profit, when it is more capitalist, it works out much worse for the people. But what's his answer? Do more of that. I'm, you know, more on the side of that. Again, you have to understand that when Bernie Sanders calls for universal education, when other progressive Democrats call for it, it's not some extremist communist idea. You know, a lot of European nations already have it, and they love those systems. And it's not even necessarily a matter of raising taxes. I mean, you can do, like Bernie Sanders wants to do, a transaction tax for the richest of the richest on Wall Street. That makes sense. But you don't even necessarily need to raise taxes to fund this. Just reallocate the money from all the ridiculous wars we're in and all the corporate welfare benefits we give and put it towards education. I mean, honestly, if you prioritize shit and you're still prioritizing something like the war on terror, which has been an abysmal failure over educating your population – not only do I question your morality, I question your intelligence. Like, you're a really silly person. And finally, how's this for irony? Chris Christie's dad use the GI Bill? Now, to George Stephanopoulos' credit, he brings that up to Chris Christie. He's like, you know, your dad used the GI Bill. Why not offer those same kind of benefits to everybody? And he's like, we do. Stephanopoulos is like, huh, what the fuck? And then he goes on to, you know, has verbal diarrhea all over the set, and they just move on to the next thing because that's how these Sunday shows work. But, Chris, that is not true. If everybody had the same benefits as the GI Bill, if everybody in America had that, we wouldn't have a student loan debt crisis right now, over $1 trillion of debt. And people can't even file bankruptcy on that debt. It's a special kind of debt where you can't really get out of it. So people are paying back student loans into their 50s. And, you know, what's Chris Christie's idea? More of that. More of that. Well, no, Chris, that's not the answer. If you want to create an America that's not only more educated, but a stronger America, an America that down the road is going to be better economically, the way you do that is to take tax dollars and invest in your population through things like healthcare and education, and it works out better in the long run for everybody. All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, Mitt Romney gives a hilariously ironic speech. I'm sorry, not a speech, a breakdown of Hillary Clinton's speech, I should say. And Rick Perry goes after President Obama's foreign policy, which he knows absolutely nothing about, and it's obvious. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
I didn't want it, not my kind, not my time. To wonder why everything I'm white, everything is gray. Now you're here, now you're away. I don't want this, remember that. I'll never forget where you're at. Don't let the days go by. I'm never alone, I'm alone all the time. Are you at one? Do you lie? We live in a wheel where everyone steals. When we ride like strawberry fields, I treat you bad, you bruise my face. Could love you more than got beautiful taste. Don't let the days go by. Could have been easier on you. I couldn't change, though I wanted to. Should have been easier by three. Oh, open fair.
soon?
You have decisions to make. Where you'll live, when you'll move, and what entertainment provider to go with. Wait, that one's easy. Verizon Fios. Power your home with super fast internet and crystal clear TV picture quality. Now that's a smart move.
We're back, guys. And we're about to swing a sledgehammer at Mitt Romney's kneecaps. Metaphorically, of course. All right. Mitt Romney gave a hilariously ironic breakdown of a Hillary Clinton speech on Morning Joe. Let's watch.
I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on Hillary Clinton's sort of secondary rollout over the weekend and the messages that she sent to her audience.
Well, I thought the text touched the various places she needs to touch to try and keep her base intact. Somehow, though, when you see her on a stage or when she comes into a room full of people, she's smiling with her mouth, but her eyes are saying, where's my latte? It just doesn't suggest that she believes everything she's saying. And I was afraid as I watched that speech, in some respects, perhaps it was that it's so different than what she said in the past that I was finding it a bit jarring. But, you know, I'm sure she'll become more effective as time goes on. But at this stage, you know, what does she really believe? I think people wonder, can they really trust Hillary Clinton?
He just put on a clinic in projection. You know, everybody's wondering what Hillary Clinton believes, because she, like, flip-flops a lot. Mitt, that's what you do. There were articles written, for example, Mitt Romney on the issue of abortion. Oh, my God. He was for it. He was against it. He was for it again. He was against it. He was for it again. He was against it. Dude was all over the map. And then it's not just abortion. It's virtually every single political issue. And it's not like it was just like, okay, he flip-flopped back from when he was governor of Massachusetts till today. No, he flip-flopped from the fucking primary season to the general election when he was running against President Obama. This idea of, like, who knows what Hillary believes? Gosh, let me tell you. No, who knows what you fucking believe, Mitt? Who knows that? Now, it is true, to be clear here, it is true. Of course, Hillary Clinton is running further to the left now, trying to appeal to the base, because she knows that that's the right political strategy in order to get through the primary and get to the general election. So she's doing essentially the exact same thing that Mitt Romney did when he was, running in the Republican primary. He was trying to appeal to the base, and then once he got to the general election, he tried to moderate his message out a little bit more. But the thing is, at least with Hillary Clinton, I don't think her flip-flops are nearly as crazy and nearly as clear. Like, with Mitt Romney, it was clear. I'm for abortion, I'm against it. I'm for it, I'm against it. With Hillary, it's like, you know, beforehand, I'm in favor of health care reform. And then now, you know, it's like, single payer, yay! And actually, I don't even know if that's a good example, because I don't know if she's come out in favor of single payer. But with, like, the TPP, for example, she used to say, you know, I'm in favor of some free trade deals, but only if they're good for the American people. So before it was like she's on the fence, and now she's like, I'm against it, I'm against it. So, like, is it a flip-flop? Maybe a little bit, but not really, kind of. But, yeah, it is true that she's running to the left, though. And it is true, at least I think, that I don't believe everything she's saying. She's not nearly as progressive as she's acting right now. But bottom line, Mitt Romney questioning anybody else's credibility is hilarious. And did you hear him there in the middle? He's like, she's smiling with her mouth, but her eyes are saying, where's my latte? So the idea is, oh, look at these, you know, upper class, disconnected liberals who aren't like the common man, whereas a guy like Mitt Romney, a good Republican, he knows the blue collar workers. Mitt, if anything, you might smile with your mouth, but your eyes are saying, where's my car elevator? Dude, you have a car elevator. And you're going to lecture Hillary Clinton about, you know, being elitist? Oh, please. Mitt Romney is smiling, but with his eyes, he's saying, where's the help? I wouldn't be surprised if he has some help in his house. So for a guy like Mitt Romney to critique Hillary Clinton and act like she's out of touch, look, it is. I do think she's somewhat out of touch. I do think she is part of that establishment, no question about it. But Mitt Romney is even worse and even deeper entrenched in that world than Hillary Clinton is. That's for sure. Okay. Now we go to Rick Perry. If I can find the clip. And there it is. Rick Perry spoke to Dana Loesch of The Blaze about foreign policy, and he's going to go after Obama here. Let's listen.
I wanted to get your thoughts on when the president, when he was at the G7 summit, this is just earlier this week, and he's speaking to all of these international leaders, and he says, apparently in complete contradiction to what the Pentagon has said, that we do not have a strategy for ISIS. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I was stunned, first off, that he would say that publicly, and particularly in that group. But more importantly, I think this is a view into this president's mentality of the challenges that this country has. He has a hard time connecting the dots from time to time, of understanding when you see what happened in Libya, in Egypt, the way that Israel's been treated by this president, the lack of engagement to stop ISIS initially inside Syria with the funding of the Syrian rebels. And I frankly think we would have gotten rid of Assad at that particular point in time as well. But even later, as ISIS moved out of Syria into the northern part of Iraq, into that Kurdistan region, the funding and the delivery of lethal weapons to the Peshmerga, one of the great fighting forces of that region, they would have stopped ISIS at that particular point in time. So it's this lack of being able to really connect the dots. I think it's a lack of executive experience that this president has, as well as a philosophical void when it comes to understanding what it takes to keep America safe and to send the message to our allies that you can count on us, we'll be there, and to send a message to your adversaries that when you cross a red line, there's going to be a price to pay. And
right.
Nobody believes there's a price to pay now. I think that's the reason ISIS is going forward. That's the reason Putin is standing there basically laughing at us as we have one lack of impact after another in the global world that we're living in.
Yeah, Rick. We're having a lack of impacts in the global world that we're living in. He said Obama lacks executive experience to deal with foreign policy issues like this. And what fucking experience do you have to deal with foreign policy issues? Here's how many foreign policy issues you've dealt with. Donut. Zero. Zip. Do these guys not realize that, you know, if you're going to critique somebody and say, here's what's wrong with them, X, Y, and Z, that X, Y, and Z also shouldn't be an issue for you if you're going to critique somebody else by that standard? He said President Obama has a problem, quote, connecting the dots on foreign policy. This coming from the guy who said that the Turkish government is run by terrorists. He said this when he ran the last time around. Okay, Rick Perry literally did not even know that the Turkish government are our allies. He did not know that at the time. His advisors had to tell him afterwards, like, oh, my God, why would you say that? Oh, my God, you just took one of our top allies in the region and said they're terrorists and said that we shouldn't work with them anymore. When they are one of our top allies in the region, and we've been working with them for an incredibly long time. He doesn't know anything. And while he doesn't know anything, what's he saying about Obama? He's saying Obama doesn't know anything. Again, this is projection. Obama lacks executive experience on foreign policy, even though he's already been president for a pretty long time, and he has trouble connecting the dots. And what, you connect them well? Don't make me go back and break out the recordings and the tape of you guys, you and all the other Republicans talking about how we got to go in after Assad, we got to go take him out. And then what happened a year later? You flip sides in the civil war and you say, actually, did I say that? No, we need to attack the people who are attacking Assad, the ISIS people, so we need to actually align ourselves with Assad. So he's like, I'm an expert, I know everything, I've been right all along. Except you haven't. You're a fucking chicken with his head cut off when talking about foreign policy issues. But the most important fact here, they're acting like, President Obama, he's so weak, letting everybody get away with everything, and that's a problem. He doesn't even have an ISIS strategy, goddammit. Really? Well then, what's this? Let's see here. Oh, the U.S. has done over 6,000 airstrikes, costing more than $2 billion, and they've killed 8,500 ISIS militants with airstrikes. So how do they not have a strategy? He has a clear strategy. And by the way, I don't even necessarily agree with it. I've said time and time again, I wish that the international coalition would lead the way more and the U.S. could finally sit out a fucking conflict. So I'm not even on this page. But what's clear is President Obama is on this page. It's like when Fox News had that ridiculous talking point, which they still use from time to time, when they say Obama's tougher on Fox News than he is on ISIS. They said that a bunch of times. Meanwhile, that was already when the fucking bombing campaign was underway. Hey, you jackasses, did President Obama bomb Neil Cavuto's summer house? Did President Obama try to do a sniper attack on Greta Van Susteren? No, right? So shut the fuck up. How many bombs does he have to drop? How many ISIS militants does he have to kill? How many airstrikes does he have to do before you say, okay, I see that he has a strategy, and I see that he's actually pretty hawkish on this issue. Again, to increase my vulnerability, I wish he wasn't. I wish we had the international community step up more. But President Obama is leading the way with airstrikes, as you jackasses claim. Well, he doesn't have an ISIS strategy, so now I'm going to attack him for that, even though he clearly has an ISIS strategy. You know, Bill Maher talks about this a lot, too. You see guys like Rick Perry say, we got to do something about ISIS. We got to do something about ISIS. And then when the media asked them, okay, ground troops? They go, no, not ground troops yet. And then they're like, okay, so then what? Because President Obama is doing airstrikes, and you're saying don't do ground troops, but go after them. So the answer to that would be let's do airstrikes. And that's when they go, and they just shit the bed intellectually. Because they don't have an answer. They actually agree with Obama, but they can't say they agree with Obama because they're Republicans, and they're ridiculous human beings. Okay, now, let's go to a very depressing story about Gaza and the recent fighting that went on there. The International Business Times and CNN are reporting on an internal Israeli military investigation and its results. This is specifically in regards to the killing of children during the recent 50-day conflict in Gaza. Here's what they say. Quote, the Israeli military announced on Thursday that it will not take any legal action against those involved in a deadly airstrike on a beach last year. The July 14th attacks on the Gaza City beach killed four boys aged between 9 and 11 from the extended Bakr family. Their names were Ishmael Zachariah, Ahid, and Muhammad. Now, I want to give you a portion of the report here so you see their reasoning, the IDF internal reasoning. They say, quote, "The military advocate general found that the attack process in question accorded with Israeli domestic law and international law requirements. The decision to attack was taken by the competent authorities, and the attack was aimed at figures who were understood to be militants from Hamas's naval forces who had gathered in order to prepare to carry out military activities against the IDF. The military advocate general found that the professional discretion exercised by all the commanders involved in the incident had not been unreasonable under the circumstances. The military advocate general ordered that the investigation file be closed without any further legal proceedings, criminal or disciplinary, to be taken against those involved in the incident." So, here's what I need you guys to understand. What the internal report found is the exact opposite of what all the journalists who were present there found. So The Guardian, for example, they had a reporter on the scene in a hotel right near the beach who saw this entire thing unfold. There were other journalists who were screaming that they're just kids. The kids were literally playing hide-and-go-seek on the beach. Hamas, nowhere in sight. The kids were fucking blown to smithereens. So what's the response from the IDF? First of all, an internal investigation is hilarious. They're always hilarious. I always laugh when police departments do them too. Yeah, we know that one of our top guys who's been with the police department for 30 years, killed an unarmed person, but we're going to do an internal investigation, and we'll get back to you and tell you what the problem is. Then, whoops, lo and behold, look at that. No wrongdoing at all. None whatsoever. Well, isn't that fucking interesting? I always say that's like, you know, let me have Lilith, who does, like, the Facebook page and is the social media manager for Secular Talk, let me have her do an internal investigation on me. Am I great or am I bad? Lilith obviously was like, well, you're great. Well, gee, I wonder why. She's part of a fucking organization. Of course she's going to say that. Of course she's going to say that. Same thing with internal police reports. Same thing with internal Israeli military reports. And what the facts really are, if you go back and read the news articles, like I said, from The Guardian at the time, with somebody who was there who saw it all unfold, they make perfectly clear that Hamas was nowhere in sight. These were kids playing on a beach, and they were killed. And the IDF is saying, no, nothing to see here. Not even a problem that rises to the level of disciplinary action where, like, these guys are fired and they can't, you know, be part of the military anymore. Not even that. Not even that. Now, I want you to do an intellectual exercise here and flip the script. Let's say Hamas tried to attack specifically Israeli forces, but let's go further here and even say Israeli forces who they know had killed civilians in Gaza. So let's say Hamas tries to attack those targets. And then let's say they screw up and kill children in Israel. Would the IDF and would Israel's response in general be the same as it was for when they did the exact same thing? Would they say, all right, okay, come on, guys. This isn't a war crime. Nobody should be in jail. Nobody should even be fired from the military organization that opposes us. Everything is totally fine. Because, come on, they were specifically trying to kill people who had killed their civilians, so let's forget this and move along. Is that how the world would respond? Is that how Israel would respond? No, absolutely not. Look, here's the bottom line, man. Even if you say, hey, these people meant well and they genuinely thought they were going after Hamas, even if those are the set of facts that you're working off of, guess what? You still ended up murdering multiple children. And when you murder multiple children, whether your intent was lovely and flowery or your intent was horrific, it's still a crime. This is the problem. I've been trying to get through to people on this point for so long now. This is why on the books in America, manslaughter is still a fucking crime, and it's still punishable by an incredible amount of time in jail. Because even if you kill somebody and you didn't have this malicious, you know, oh, I hate them and I want to kill them and I'm planning it out, attitude, you still belong in jail because you still did something wrong. You murdered children when Hamas was nowhere in sight. Even if you think Hamas was in sight, guess what? You still fucked up, which means you got to fire the intelligence people, you got to discipline the intelligence people, and you got to discipline the people who pulled the trigger. And then people always fire back, well, it's just the chain of command and you have to listen to the chain of command and this and that and yada yada. But we reject that argument when it comes to our enemies all the time. In the Nuremberg trials, they rejected that argument. The people who said, yeah, I was taking my orders from the SS, and the SS were above me, but I was just doing what I was told, so I can't be held accountable. I was following orders, and that's my job. If anybody along the chain said, fuck this, CIA torture in America. If anybody along the chain said, fuck this, I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to listen. I'm going to go right now to the authorities and to the press and to talk to them. We could have stopped it. We could have prevented it. We could have not made this horrible mistake. But it's this collective delusional sheep mentality of following along that leads to situations like this. And it's totally unacceptable. We all know we wouldn't accept this reasoning if it was Hamas or if it was the Palestinians that did this to the Israelis. Why the fuck would we accept it when it's the Israelis doing it to the Palestinians? It doesn't make any goddamn sense. And it's things like this that make the rest of the world look at Israel and facepalm and go, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because the idea is, if we fuck up, if we do something bad, if we kill civilians, we get a pass because we're the good guys. Come on, guys, it's us. Look at these savages over here in Gaza. You know what I'm saying? They're not like us. They're not part of the West. They don't like us anyway. They all have that seed planted that we're all terrible in their mind anyway. So if we happen to kill them, well, that's whatever. But the problem is what? Then you're the ones that also have that seed in your mind. If there's anybody who thinks, I hate all Israelis or I hate all Jews, those people are wrong. By the same token, if anybody thinks, well, I hate all people in Gaza, I hate all Palestinians or I hate all Muslims, that's also wrong. Why can't we be objective and factual in how we look at things and assign guilt where it should be assigned? We got to be better than this, guys. You know, I'm not expecting the Israeli military to internally throw their people overboard, but what I am expecting is the United States to step up and say, all right, we're cutting off funding. You can't have this, can't happen, man. The United States should cut off funding. You know, at the UN, we should lift our veto and back a Palestinian state. We should essentially sit down and force Israel to do a two-state solution with the Palestinians. Let's go to the 67 borders. Let's get this done. And by the way, when you do that, that leads to long-term stability, that leads to long-term peace. If you have a permanent occupation, it's going to breed conflict more and more. And if you kill their kids between the ages of 9 and 11, and then you say, we didn't really do anything wrong, that's also going to breed more conflict. This is why I say Netanyahu is Hamas's best friend. Because they always shoot up in popularity after he does some stupid shit like this. They went from, in the last Gaza incursion, they weren't popular in Gaza and the Palestinian territories. After the incursion, they shot up 15 percentage points in popularity. Stop the madness. We need to right our wrongs and fix it when we fuck up, and to just let people go when they murder children, or at the very least do manslaughter of children. That's not acceptable. All right, let's see. Do I have time here to do one more? Not really. All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, I got one more on Netanyahu, this time on the BDS movement. Then I got an unfortunate story coming out of Colorado about a marijuana ruling. It's the top court in Colorado ruling on the issue of medical marijuana. Believe it or not, bad news out of Colorado on marijuana. Then we got Ann Coulter, who spoke to the ultra-conservative Gavin McInnes, and they had a conversation straight out of the 1800s. It's so crazy, I don't even know if she believes it. A California conservative radio host is oh so outraged and oh so mad that rich counties might have to cut back on watering their golf courses. Now, I'm a lover of golf. So it's almost like I'm biased at the beginning of the story in favor of the person who likes golf. Not really. When I give you his quotes, you'll see that this person is a bad person. What's amazing is how fucked up the priorities are, and you'll see it. The idea is, like, it's more important for us to not have brown golf courses than for brown people to have water. I'm not kidding about that. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. That'll be the last story of the day. But anyway, let's take our final break here. Then when we come back, we'll have all that stuff and much, much more. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back.
they were all yellow. I came along, I wrote a song for you, and all the things you do, and it was called yellow. So then I took my turn, oh what a thing to do. It was all yellow. You're still, oh yeah, you're still in love. Something to you know, I love you so. You know.
Another Netanyahu story, oh boy. The AFP is reporting on another ridiculous comment from Benjamin Netanyahu, who is, of course, the right-wing prime minister of Israel. So Netanyahu decided to throw some haymakers at the BDS movement. For those of you who don't know, that movement is the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Campaign that's putting, quote, political and economic pressure on Israel over its occupation of the Palestinian territories in a bid to repeat the success of the efforts that ended apartheid in South Africa. So Netanyahu is afraid that it'll work, so of course he's now compared it to Nazi Germany while visiting the Polish foreign minister. He said, quote, "The attacks on the Jews were always preceded by the slander of the Jews. What was done to the Jewish people then is being done to the Jewish state now. In those days, we could do nothing. Today, we can speak our mind, hold our ground. We're going to do both." So remember, he's talking about the BDS movement there. He's not talking about ISIS or jihad. He's not even talking about Hamas. He's talking about the BDS movement. He said, "The attacks on the Jews were always preceded by the slander of the Jews. What was done to the Jewish people is now being done to the Jewish state. In those days, we couldn't do anything. Now we can fight back." Okay, but what they're trying to do very clearly is, through peaceful means, get a Palestinian state. That's what they're trying to do. They didn't say, hey, go pick up, you know, some AK-47s, go get some grenade launchers, and let's go to work. What they said is, hey, we actually agree with Netanyahu and the broader sentiment in Israel in the sense that we're not militants. We don't want to literally fight here to try to get the establishment of a state. We want to go in a political and diplomatic direction. We want to apply pressure internationally. We want to, without shedding any blood, find a way to establish a Palestinian state in the same way that you guys established the state of Israel through the UN. So here we're trying to rally the international community to crack down on the economics of Israel to push you in a corner to make you go, okay, no more, our economy hurts too much, now there's civil unrest in our country, now we'll do something to permanently get a peace deal and to get a Palestinian state. So look at the hypocrisy of Netanyahu on this. Because any way that anybody tries to establish a Palestinian state, he immediately goes, you're like Nazis, you're anti-Semites and you're Nazis. But then, like, what the fuck do you want them to do? Just accept the occupation and lay down and say, okay, no Palestinian state anymore and you guys can do whatever the fuck you want and steal more of our land, by the way, as you just did. We love it. Oh, we love it. It's so great. Is that what you want them to do? Because you're leaving them no option. Whenever they do, whenever Hamas attacks, whenever there's any actual fighting, you condemn it. And you should. You're right to condemn that because oftentimes civilians die and it's counterproductive. So, but you condemn that. You also condemn it when they go directly through the UN. Like Jordan proposed a peace deal for the Palestinians at the UN. Pretty much everybody supported it but the U.S. and Israel. And the idea was 1967 borders, let's shake on it now, work out the details, and have it done within 5 years. You guys said no, and you're anti-Semites for even proposing that. So it's no when they fight you. It's no when they try to go through the UN and do it diplomatically. When they sit face-to-face with you and try to get a peace deal the same way, okay, so don't go through the UN, but let's sit together and work this out. You say no to any state. And then now when they're like, okay, finally we're going to go to the International Criminal Court and we're going to put pressure on you politically and economically, you go, no, you're an anti-Semite. You're like the Nazis for doing this. No, but this is fundamentally the opposite of Nazis. In fact, when he says this, this is disrespectful to everybody who was involved in that, to all the ancestors who were in Nazi Germany during Hitler's rise. This is fucking disrespectful to those people. Because you have people using peaceful means to try to resolve a problem, and he's saying you're like the people who shoved Jews into gas chambers and murdered them and did it systematically. No, it's what we have here is a situation where Netanyahu is exploiting a tragedy for political gain, and he could not be more factually incorrect in his understanding of it, okay? And look, I said it before, I'll say it again. I'm totally in favor of this movement, and I'm in favor of this movement because I am pro-Israel. Because I understand, unlike this fucking asshole, that the way that you long-term peace and stability in Israel is to do a two-state solution on the 1967 borders. You build a wall, and you have both Palestine and Israel recognized by the international community, and you call it a day. Now, does that mean, oh, there's never going to be any fighting anymore, ever? Of course not, because there's right-wing idiots on both sides, in the Palestinian territories and in Israel, who are going to say, I want all the land, I want all the land. But those people are not interested in peace to begin with. So they're dismissed from the adults' table in the conversation when the adults decide, let's do a two-state solution. Okay, so that's the answer, and that would give long-term peace. or certainly we would get much closer to peace if we do that. Because when you do that, what happens? You take away the venom and you take away the main argument used by people like Hamas, where they say they're never going to give us a state anyway, let's fight back and let's resist and let's end the occupation and let's kick them off the land. Well, if you're willing to show that you're reasonable and, okay, let's have peace and let's do a two-state solution, hey, look, you have a state now. A lot of people are going to go, yeah, the Hamas guys were wrong. They wanted to do violence all along. You know, Fatah and the more open-minded people said, hey, let's actually try to work something out. They were right. Look, it worked out. We have the evidence here. So in my opinion, it's more pro-Israel to be in favor of this movement. So you put economic pressure on them and you make them get to the table to make a peace deal, and that leads to long-term stability. If you're against this movement and you're for continued occupation and continued expansion, that's only going to lead to more conflict and more strife for everybody. All right, now let's go to Colorado. There's an unfortunate story coming out of Colorado. Earlier today, the state's highest court ruled that a company has the right to fire somebody if they're using medical marijuana. That's really weird, Reuters reports. Quote, medical marijuana patients in Colorado could lose their jobs because the drug remains illegal under federal law, upholding the firing of a quadriplegic who tested positive for pot. The decision, which affirms a state appeals court ruling from April 2013, stems from a dismissal in 2010 by the Dish Network of one of its employees, Brandon Coates, for violating the company's anti-drug policy. They say Coates, who was injured in a car crash, consumes marijuana at home in accordance with a medical marijuana card issued to him under state law. He asked the Colorado Supreme Court to reinstate his wrongful termination claim against Dish, but the state's high court upheld the lower court opinion, finding that federal drug law trumps a state statute that protects workers from engaging in lawful activities outside of the workplace. Now, so understand, so this is actually, believe it or not, it's actually a very complex legal issue because you're dealing with federal law and state law and what supersedes what and how exactly do you work this out. And to be totally clear here, given all the facts that I just gave you, I actually have to come out on the side of they're right. And understand, not because I'm anti-weed in any way, shape, or form. I want to legalize it now. But the reason why, at least according to these facts I just gave you, I come out on the side of the court is that what they're saying is our hands are tied because although, yeah, in the state of Colorado, marijuana is legal, on a federal level, it is illegal. And according to the Constitution, federal law does override state law. So if they fire somebody because they did a federally illegal drug, okay, that's totally within their rights because they did a federally illegal drug. And remember, federal law overrides state law. So they have – so it, the only way that you could rule the opposite is if you say the opposite, that, okay, since it's legal under state law, then, you know, whatever, he can – get away with it because it's legal under state law. But when you add the fact that federal law overrides state law, you almost have to go, okay, well, they have an argument here because they could just point to federal law. Now, the reason why you can't rule the other way really is that just imagine the same debate we're having with a different issue in mind. So imagine the issue of gun laws. So if a state wants to override the gun laws that the federal government puts into place, can they do that? No, of course not. And a lot of right-wingers believe that they can, but that's, you know, like nullification, they call it. These are nullification laws that you're not allowed to do that. You can't just say, at the state level, we disagree with this federal law, so we're going to override it and we're going to ignore it. But here's where the twist comes in, okay? In this case, the guy smoked weed outside of work. So, and they say he wasn't high at work. It was outside of work that he did all this, okay? And he takes it for pain. Well, now I swing back and I say, okay, now I'm on the guy's side and he should be reinstated into his job. And for me on that issue, it's the simple fact that why should any job be able to fire you for something you do when you're not on the job, right? So, you know, if I I don't know, if my boss doesn't like how much I drink on the weekends or what drugs I do on the weekends, does that mean that when I come in Monday, even if I'm sober, that he can say, you're fired because I know on Friday night you did X, Y, and Z? I don't like the kind of sex you had. I don't like this. I don't like that. No, no. Why should – I mean, you've legalized a capitalist tyranny if you allow bosses to fire workers for anything, even when they're not at work. That doesn't make sense. That's ridiculous. So when you look at all the facts of the case, you have to go on the side of the guy who was fired here. But remember, if he actually smoked weed while, like, at work and on the job, then it's a totally different story, and you have to go side with the federal government, because if you say that in this case state law overrides federal law, then you're saying that in all other cases, and then we opened up a can of worms, because what happens when a Republican state says our abortion ban overrides, you know, the federal law and the Constitution, which says, you know, abortion is a right up to a certain point. Well, then we all flip, right? Then all the liberals go, no, you can't do that. The federal law overrides state law, you know? So you got to be consistent on the federal issue and the state issue. We always go after Scalia about how he always sides with whatever his political ideology wants. So, like, he'll be on the side of, if it's immigration, he's on the side of the states. You do whatever you want. If it's abortion, he's on the side of the states. You do whatever you want. If it's marijuana, he's on the side of the feds. He says, okay, crack down. We can't be the opposite hypocrites. You know what I mean? We can't say whenever we want, go with the states. Whenever, you know, whenever we want, go with the feds. Because then we're hypocrites too, just the other kind of hypocrites. So the reality is the Supremacy Clause does make clear federal law overrides state law. Okay, so when that's the relevant legal issue at hand, you have to side with federal law over state law because that's the way the Constitution works. But in this case, since he's out of work when he's smoking the weed, it's a totally different scenario. And I don't think any job should be able to fire anybody for some shit they do outside of work. That doesn't make sense. Okay. Was that complicated enough for you? I think it was. When I was reading the article earlier, I was like, this is going to be a little difficult to explain. But nonetheless, I'm going to try. All right, now. Let's go to some religious stuff here. Fox contributor and card-carrying out-of-touch white guy, Cal Thomas, weighed in on the gay marriage case being heard by the Supreme Court, and he made a curious argument.
I think a lot of evangelical leaders are looking at this as inevitable, that the Supreme Court will, in fact, strike down laws restricting marriage between men and women. But I think what the court has to do then, if it's going to do this, is say, okay, where is the line then? If equal protection covers gays, lesbians, transgenders, and the rest, what about the polygamists? Some of their groups have already said that after same-sex marriage is approved, they want polygamy approved. And even further out, the adult child marriage people, men especially who want to marry young boys or young girls, as occurs in some Muslim countries, by the way, they want their rights too. So who's going to say no, and based on what?
Well, and that came up during the Supreme Court arguments about this, not the extent of the adult-child relationships, but conversations about polygamy and those kinds of things. And people will say, it's a crazy slippery slope. Yeah. You're just trying to scare people, but that's never going to happen.
Well, where's the standard? I mean, if it's not the Constitution, if it's not Scripture, where is the standard?
I'll tell you where the standard is. Consenting adults. That's it. That's it, man. Very simple. Consenting adults. That's it. Now, also, notice the irony of the things he brought up there. He's like, well, if equal protection applies to gays, come on, that's crazy. That's stupid. But if it applies to gays, well, who's next? Is it going to be the polygamy people? Is it going to be pedophilia? Is it going to be people marrying little kids? I mean, come on, man. This slippery slope, I mean, where does it end? Hey, idiot. No. You have it exactly backwards. Because if people come out in support of, say, pedophilia, it would be on religious grounds they would make that argument. They would say, you just mentioned it too, in some Muslim countries they have those practices. So religion is the key thing where they say it's my religious liberty and my religious right to marry, you know, a little kid. It ain't the liberals who are going to be on that side. It's not the liberals who are going to argue for that. Like I said, the liberals are arguing consenting adults. Now, that does include polygamy. But here's another layer of irony. In the Bible, the number one form of marriage is polygamy. So he's like, goddamn slippery slope. Where does this end, man? What's it going to end with? Equal protection for polygamists? We got to base our laws on Scripture. If you base the laws on Scripture, we allow polygamy. If you base the laws on Scripture, we allow polygamy, and for some religions, we do allow child marriage. According to the Bible, we would have to allow rape. I mean, for fuck's sake, people sell their daughters off to their rapists in the Bible. There's one part of the Bible where daughters get their father drunk and rape their father. One of the things they do in the Bible, some of the men chop off their dick and balls and live lives of celibacy. You want to do that, buddy? Is that what you want to do? Again, they don't even know what's in the Bible, but they argue so arrogantly like, oh, well, if we move away from Scripture, if we move away from the Bible, it's like polygamy's going to be next or something. Polygamy would have been the first thing because that's the number one form of marriage in the Bible. And also, look, again, to be clear, I'm pro-polygamy, okay? But I actually have an intelligent standard. His standard is go based off religion, which is already stupid, and he doesn't even know what's in the religion, which shows you he's just going off of opinion, okay? That's his standard. Our standard is consenting adults. So, yes, that absolutely includes gay people. Yes, that includes transgender people. Yes, that includes polygamy. It certainly does not include, where do they take the argument next? Bestiality. They're pro-bestiality. No, we're not. Again, we covered a story recently. A guy tried to fuck a horse. He broke his leg while trying to fuck the horse. Okay, that's not consensual. The horse was fucking kicking you, and you broke your leg because of it. So it's not consensual, so we're not on that page. Pedophilia, same thing. Kids, by definition, cannot consent because their brains are not sexually mature yet. Their bodies are not sexually mature yet. So they're not in a place where they know enough about sex and know what it is to consent. They're not fully formed yet. So that also is not something we protect. But see, here's the thing. We, on sexual issues and marriage issues, we are consistent. We do have a standard. We say consenting adults. Who are the people that aren't consistent? He's not consistent. They're not consistent. Because he's like, I just want one man, one woman. Oh, really? What's your backing for that? I don't know. Or actually, yeah, I do know the Bible. But no, read the Bible. Polygamy's number one in there. And do you want to legalize selling your daughters off into sex slavery? So they're not consistent. They don't have a standard at all. So everything he's saying there is projection. All right, now we go to Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter spoke to ultra-conservative fail. What's his name? Oh, there's a... I didn't know how to pronounce his name. Or I actually misspelled it here. And I shouldn't, because we covered like 8 stories on this guy already. All right, let's try that again. Ann Coulter spoke to the ultra-conservative Gavin McInnes, and they had a conversation that was essentially straight out of the year 1800.
When did it start? Was it 65 when the gates just were broken open? And they said it was temporary, but they never closed again. They came right off the hinges.
Yeah, it came off the hinges. It was the Kennedy 65 Immigration Act, specifically designed to change the demographics of this country, though when it went through, as with Obamacare, surrounded with lies, a miasma of lies, this will not change the demographics of America, we'll get basically the same people we've always gotten. No, it was specifically designed to bring in peasant cultures who would remain poor for generations, remain on government support, so that you would have a solid block of Democratic voters, and it works. Obama never would have been elected, and he certainly wouldn't have been reelected. Romney won bigger against... If the demographics of this country had not changed so dramatically because of immigration, Romney would have won a bigger landslide than Reagan did against Carter in 1980.
Really? Well, the other big problem with that was women voters. Women should have the right to vote, but should they vote?
Well, as you know, my position is women should not have the right to vote.
Good.
Very popular on college campuses.
Yeah, I mean, we'll lose the odd N as collateral damage, but...
No, we can still write books. We can run for office.
You just can't vote.
Exactly.
How about if you don't pay tax, you can't vote?
That was what my father always said.
Really? I've just been obsessed with this recently, thinking, you're not a customer. You don't have a say in how this restaurant goes. That's like strangers coming in off the street, homeless men, and saying, I want this on the menu, and then walking out.
Well, technically what he said was you could vote if you weren't getting back stuff from the government. So if you're breaking even,
okay,
but not if you're getting more from the government than you're paying in, well, you're just voting for more stuff for yourself.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That's why Democrats like them so much.
I love how stupid and ignorant these guys are, because they think they're like, we found a way to eliminate Democrats from voting. Make it so that if you don't pay taxes, you can't vote. We got them. We just got them. Oh, my God. Look at the data, you fucking children. Who are the biggest net receivers of federal tax money? So that's exactly what Coulter said about the people who take money back. They really shouldn't be able to vote. Who are the biggest net receivers? Like 9 of the top 10 are conservative states, red states. It's the Republicans who are the bigger welfare queens. And let's be clear. Oh, people who don't pay taxes or people who get money back from the government, they really shouldn't vote. Number one group of people where none of them would be able to vote. Wall Street. Did you see the fucking bailout, you jackasses? All the overwhelmingly conservative people, they're the bankers that are the CEOs that are super rich, they all wouldn't be able to vote. Because they got billions of tax dollars when they bankrupted their own companies because of their horrible decisions. So they'd be the first to be eliminated. The second ones to be eliminated, the entire military-industrial complex. Everybody from Halliburton, everybody from KBR, everybody from Raytheon, everybody from Boeing. They are the biggest welfare queens. ExxonMobil! Nobody would ever be allowed at ExxonMobil to vote. They take billions of dollars of subsidies every year. Your plan of people who don't pay taxes or people who get money back from the government, they shouldn't vote, that would eliminate a lot of Republicans, you assholes. But it's so funny how they're like, well, obviously the moochers and the parasites are the Democrats, so let's do this policy. No, but look at the data. That's not true. You think it's true because you're an idiot who buys into ridiculous stereotypes. Just like Mitt Romney with his 47%. You know, the 47% are never going to take personal responsibility, and they're just going to be moochers. In his mind, that 47% are all Democrats. But like I said, if you look at the data, they're not. More of that money goes to Republican states. Oh, my God, they're so stupid. Oh, my God, they're so stupid. They're so stupid. But did you catch in the middle? That wasn't even the most outlandish shit they said, which is insane. They just said, we are anti-democracy. We are pro-fascism. But that's not even the most extreme thing they said. Ann Coulter's like, you know, women shouldn't have the right to vote. And that whole mindset stems from the idea that, like, okay, little woman, you know your place. Now go in the kitchen and make daddy a sandwich. That's, like, the idea behind it. So your whole career is down the fucking drain. But notice, she made an exception. She's like, well, of course we should be able to write books and give political opinions and stuff like that. Anything I do should be allowed, but they shouldn't be able to vote, though. What a ridiculous human being. And notice, you know, what were the Founding Fathers in favor of? The worst aspect of the Founding Fathers was what? I don't know, maybe the fact that they were fucking pro-slavery, and they said only land-owning white men should be able to vote. Now, notice what they just said right there. The people who, you know, people who, in their minds, they think, oh, people who don't pay taxes are people who get money from the government. What are they really saying in their own mind? Again, they don't know the data, so they don't know that they're actually against their own people in many respects here. But in their own minds, they're thinking, don't let the black people vote. Don't let the poor white people vote who don't own land. And don't let the women vote. They go out. They said that, okay? So don't let any of those people vote. Only land-owning white males should be able to vote. Well, that was the worst aspect of the Founding Fathers, right? And what was the other one again? Yes, it was slavery. So why don't you guys go one little eensy-weensy bit step further, and then, you know, voila, you're right back to the slavery days, which I'd imagine in the back of your minds, on some level, you probably want back as well, since you want everything else that was bad from that era back, as you just made clear. All right, next. Raw Story is reporting on an incredible breach of separation of church and state coming out of upstate New York. They say, quote, a Washington minister will speak in New York State this week about his personal experience with dying. All right, hold on. I'm pretty sure you can't talk about your dying experience because that means you ain't dead, bitch. You're alive. You're giving a speech. You're not dead. They say he wants to talk about dying, going to heaven, meeting Jesus and angels, and being cured of 29 illnesses and coming back to life. The Post Star reports that evangelical minister Dean Braxton will give biographical and religious testimony in the auditorium of the Whitehall Junior Senior High School, which is a public school. So understand exactly what's happening here. You have a guy who's going to speak at a public school, so tax-funded, and he's going to talk about how I was raised from the dead. I met Jesus. I met angels. I was cured of 29 illnesses. I died and came back to life, guys. Christianity's true. I know. I can prove it. I died and came back at a public school. Tell me how this doesn't violate separation of church and state. This is only the clearest violation I've ever seen of separation of church and state. Now, you're not allowed to do, you're simply not allowed to do this under federal law and under the Constitution. But let's do a thought experiment here real quick. So you want to open this door, you want to allow religious dingbats to go in there and preach things that are as if they're factual when they're not factual. Why would you stop here? Invite the Hindu guy to come give a speech where he says he died and met Vishnu. Invite the person who's a fundamentalist and believes in the Bhagavad Gita. Invite the Muslim who said, I know Islam is correct. I know Islam is true. I died and came back to life, and I was told. Okay, Muhammad is the prophet. I know that for sure. Why not? What, those people don't exist? Of course they exist. They exist in every religion. Every religion has somebody who's a fundamentalist that says X, Y, and Z is true. All these metaphysical, supernatural bullshit claims I know are true because I experienced it personally. So if you're going to take the personal experience of just a Christian and show that in the schools, you can't stop there. You got to do the Hindu. You got to do the Muslim. You got to do all the different people, the Scientologists, the Mormons, everybody who I know for sure this is the case. But you're not going to do that. And in fact, you would scream against it, especially if you did it with a Muslim. People would go crazy if you did it for a Muslim. So what are you doing here? You're being fucking hypocrites who are un-American. Because what does it mean to be American? It means you believe in the country. You believe in the things laid out in the Constitution, like freedom of speech, for example, and separation of church and state. What you're saying is, I don't care about any of that. Let's become the Christian Taliban and preach nonsense to kids in public schools with tax dollars. Not on my watch. All right, and finally, I'm going to run out of time on this one, guys, but check it out later on YouTube. I'll get cut off here, but sorry. You'll hear it later on YouTube. A conservative talk radio host in California named Steve Juhas complained to the Washington Post about the new California water restrictions implemented because of the drought. So he lives in Rancho Santa Fe, which is a very wealthy suburb. And when Brown called for a 25% reduction in water use, Brown, of course, is the governor, residents of Rancho Santa Fe increased consumption by 9% instead. Now, was it to outwardly say, fuck you, or, you know, was it just something they did by accident? I don't know for sure, but either way, those are the facts. They said 25% reduction, this rich suburb, mostly conservative, said, fuck that, let's go up. So here's what this radio host said, quote, people should not be forced to live on property with brown lawns, golf on brown courses, or apologize for wanting their gardens to be beautiful. We pay significant property taxes based on where we live. And no, we're not all equal when it comes to water. Okay, think about what this pampered little prick is saying. He's saying, no, you don't get it. If the decision is we need to save the water so other people can, like, shower and, you know, drink, he goes, no, I don't care about that. We're not all equal when it comes to water. He says, quote, we're not all equal when it comes to water. So I'd rather have my golf course not be brown than have your kid be able to take a shower and have something to drink. Oh, my God. And they say that the liberals are, like, the selfish, emotional ones. Look at this clown. My golf course is slightly discolored. I don't like this. Let's make it so your kid can't drink so I can play golf on a green course. He's not done. Quote, I think we're being overly penalized and we're certainly being overly scrutinized by the world. I abhor the culture of drought shaming, especially the aerial shots of lavish lawns targeted for derision on the local TV news. I'm a conservative, so this is strange, but I defend Barbara Streisand's right to have a green lawn. When we bought, we didn't plan on getting a place that looks like we're living in an African savanna. Oh, my God. No, guys, he doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't understand it because he's not a smart person. He doesn't get that, like, dude, it's not like, you know, they're persecuting you and you're targeted and they're, like, just anti-you. No, no, this isn't oppression, okay? This is climate change, the reality of climate change and this terrible drought. And it, out of absolute necessity, they have to ration the water to make sure that everybody has enough water to fucking live. And look at you. You're like, oh, my lawn isn't perfectly green. This is unacceptable. I don't like this. I'm being overly scrutinized by the world. No, 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 no. You are overly scrutinizing the world when the world says to you, dude, you got to, you know, we don't have water. You got to kind of lay off the fucking on 17T with watering everything, okay? But he views it as like an affront to my liberty and my dignity. No, an affront to liberty and dignity is when a kid can't drink or you can't take a fucking shower because of the water shortage. An affront to liberty and dignity is like ExxonMobil, you know, continuing to push us further and further down the road of climate change and fucking us over. But are you mad at them? Are you mad at the people screwing everybody and pushing us further and further down the road of climate change? Of course you're not. Who are you mad at? You're mad at the liberals and the smart people and the scientists who are just trying to make the best of a bad situation.